to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first thing I'm sure you'll be quick to notice is that the introduction music is back for the podcast. I had gotten rid of it a while back due to some problems with the bitrate that I originally had the intro done in and the bitrate I do the show in. It just wasn't mixing well, and it was actually mixing the show to its bitrate. I'm not 100% sure why Audacity did that. I removed it with the intention of putting it right back, and it kind of just fell down the wayside. Finally took the time today to suss out the needed lame command line options to resample that to the appropriate format. If you have any problems with that, do let me know, but it should be back for good now. And thanks to all the people who kept kind of poking me to get it back. Multiple people did contact me saying that it kind of sounded weird with me just starting talking, and I definitely do agree. Next. Based on the feedback of a thread in the suggestions forum, we've started a LinuxQuestions.org Frapper map. And for those of you not familiar with Frapper, Frapper is basically a Google Maps mashup that allows you to put a pin on your location. So any LQ member can now go to the LQ Frapper map, put a pin on their location, and it kind of gives you an idea of the geographic distribution for LQ members. Now, we've only started this a couple of days ago, so I think there's only about 30 or 40 pins on the map right now. But if you have a chance, go to frapper.com/LinuxQuestions.org, and there's no dot in there, just LinuxQuestions.org, and put your pin on the map. Lastly, I gave you a quick update in the last podcast about the LQ Jobs Marketplace, and that update was that we had our first job posted. Happy to give you another quick update saying another job has been posted, so this looks like it is going to get some traction. The jobs look outstanding. It should be some great opportunity for LQ members to get gainful employment in the open source and Linux world. So you can head over to www.linuxquestions.org/jobs to take a look at the job. And if you're interested in posting there, we accept multiple forms of payment, and you can get your job in front of the entire LQ community instantly. Now, onto the news. The first story I have for you is AMD to acquire ATI. So some rumors do turn out to be true, and this was rumored for quite a while now, and AMD has announced that it will acquire ATI for nearly $5.4 billion in both cash and stock. On the day this was announced, the ATI stock was up almost 20% by the end of the day, and AMD was down almost 5%. So you can kind of get an easy glance at what the market thinks of this. The repercussions of this one should be fairly large. I keep reading that this will be good for consumers, but that is not something that I'm necessarily convinced of the case. We used to have Intel and AMD competing aggressively in one market, and then ATI and NVIDIA competing aggressively in another market. This move, I think, could polarize things quite a bit, which could actually decrease choice and also competition. And that's rarely, obviously, good for consumers. I see many questions being raised by this one. How will it impact Apple, for instance? And, of course, Apple uses ATI for, you know, GPU and video, and then Intel for all the CPU stuff. So whether they'll continue to do that is, I think, an uncertain at this point. How will this impact NVIDIA, who sold quite well in the AMD market and obviously has to compete with Intel itself, who's now doing a low-end GPU on their side? So where this leaves NVIDIA is kind of up in the air. And I've also seen speculation that AMD may try to move to an on-core GPU, and that's on the CPU core, basically alleviating the need for a separate card and kind of going back to something that was thought about a while back. And while all these are interesting questions, of course, they're not the ones that I personally am concerned with. What I want to know, and what I really haven't seen getting much coverage, especially in the mass media, but even in the blogosphere and other places, is how this move will impact how GPU providers, and NVIDIA, I think, specifically, will look at open source. Now, ATI and NVIDIA have traditionally been extremely tight-lipped about specs and have had either little or in many cases, no open source support for their latest cutting-edge chipsets. And in many cases, they've not even had any open source support for 3D, even for older chipsets. For instance, the NV open source driver is very good at 2D stuff, but you need the NVIDIA proprietary driver pretty much to do anything 3D. And ATI's Linux-based drivers, by the way, have traditionally been pretty bad. And they're getting better recently, but not open sourced and not good yet, just getting better. The question is, will AMD take a different look at the market and provide open source Linux 3D based drivers for all the ATI products, and not just old ones here, the newer ones, which is pretty important, I think. And of course, only time can tell. I haven't seen any official announcements on this, but if they did, it would then be interesting to see how it changes the landscape in general, and if NVIDIA would then follow suit. Although I have seen many rumors, NVIDIA was started by a couple of guys that left SGI, and then SGI had found some of their intellectual property in the NVIDIA drivers, and I think they then licensed some things from SGI, so whether they even could fully open source their driver, whether they'd have to get permission from SGI or whoever else they have third-party information from, I'm not real clear on that, but it still would be interesting to see how they respond. And so then maybe I guess it will be good for consumers in that note, even if it does serve to polarize the market. The next story I have is Ottawa Linux Symposium. And this is another conference that I meant to go to, and it just slipped right by and I didn't get a chance. I'd seen a write-up last year, which was what prompted me to want to go, and after this one, I definitely am going to make a concerted effort to get there next year. Of course, on the missed conference note, OSCON, which is an absolutely fantastic show that I've been able to attend the last 2 years, is actually going on right now, and I'm very disappointed I had to miss that one. Some of the flights, just by the time I wanted to book, did not work out at all with my schedule. So I've been kind of reading up on OSCON, too. It looks like it's been a great show so far. But back to the Ottawa Linux Symposium, SourceForge has posted a very thorough wrap-up, which included the closing keynote by Greg Cage. To summarize, and this was a summarization by Greg, Linux supports more devices than anyone else. Linux progresses by evolution, not design. Closed source drivers are illegal. Linux can use help with reviews and testing. And that's end quote. Now, of course, that's an overly succinct summation, though, and if you're at all interested in the Linux kernel development, you should read the entire thing and head over to NewsForge. There's a link. I may just be scrolling off the homepage now. It was about a third down the homepage yesterday. But the entire thing definitely is worth a read. And I've made a note in my Trio to remind myself about this conference next year. So hopefully I will see everyone there. The next story I have is a new Google service. And as I just mentioned, I was already disappointed that I wasn't able to attend OSCON this year. And like I said, it is just a fantastic event. Then I saw this at a talk that's going to be held today in actually just about 2 hours, given the time difference. Greg Stein, who's a Google employee, will be releasing details about a new Google service specifically for the open source community. So I guess let the speculation begin, and I can guarantee you this will be something after the announcement that I will be covering in next week's podcast. And really, the options on this one are limitless. He had posted something to the one of the Google blogs about this and was very nonspecific. So it could be something like an open source code repository, of course searchable via Google technology. Could be a SourceForge-esque kind of operation. It could even be a source code repository of code from Google. Really, we have no idea. Should know in about 2 hours. And like I said, I will definitely follow up next week with the answer to what this is exactly. The next story I have is, what can we learn from Microsoft? This is a story that was posted by Stephen Von Nichols over at Linux Watch, and he lists his 5 top things that Linux can learn from Microsoft. And I'm going to read you the list. It's 1. MSDN. 2. Common Interface. 3. Common Format. 4. Marketing. And 5. OEM Support. And while, of course, I don't necessarily agree with 100% of everything in there, when do you ever really agree with 100% of almost anything? He does bring up some very valid points. And I think that marketing and OEM support are going to be absolutely critical if we ever really want to cross the chasm. And I'd still contend that once we get to the other side of that chasm, we might not like where we are. But that's definitely a separate topic, and it is one that I've covered at length in the past. So if it's something you're interested to, you might want to listen to some of the old podcasts. I've definitely covered that topic in multiple old episodes. Back to Steven's list, though. As for number one, better documentation for developers is something that is sorely needed, and I've actually heard a recent rumor that OSDL will be putting one full-time employee on this, and that would be extremely helpful. And I think a single person just dedicated whose full-time job is just doing documentation like this could really make a substantial impact. So let's hope that OSDL follows through on that one. Like I said, it is just a rumor, though, so no confirmation there. I've kind of covered the OEM topic before, and it is something that's also going to be extremely critical. In the end, all too often, though, I think, and I'm not talking about Steven here, actually, I'm talking about kind of the community in general, we're just too quick to just ignore or blindly hate Microsoft, which really is not in our best interest. And it's good to get a reminder, and I think this article is a good reminder, that sometimes we need to stay the path, focus on what we're doing well, and of course what we're doing not well, and where we can improve, and that will let us focus on what's really important, and that is in our best interest. The next story I have is there will be a Flash Player 9 for Linux, and somehow I absolutely missed this one, I have no idea how, but there has been confirmation from Adobe / Macromedia, I guess, that they will be releasing Flash Player 9 for Linux. While this is likely not of interest to the 100% OSS kind of at all costs group, I think it is encouraging. As much as I completely loathe Flash ads and in many cases Flash in general, many interesting things do happen in Flash. Now increasingly, those things require Flash 8 or greater, which is frustrating, and I think a lot of people think, hey, Flash 9 for other platforms, not including Linux, is out. Flash 8's one old. We don't need to support anything older, not even realizing that that means anyone using Linux by default cannot see any of it. Like I said, this will bring Linux in line with the current Mac and Windows platforms. So if Flash Player on Linux is a topic that interests you, the penguin.swf blog over at Macromedia tracks its development, and it is really an interesting read. It's very technical, and they really get into the implementation details and kind of what platforms they're using as far as, you know, it's GTK1 with an option for GTK2, and they cover the video encoders and codecs they'll be using and things like that. And some of what's posted, of course, is good news. Some of it's not great, but it is definitely an honest perspective from an insider, which to me is always a fascinating read. On the Adobe Linux note, though, there is still no word on when or if we'll ever see a Photoshop port. The last story I have is IE7 to be pushed to users via Windows Update. And it looks like if you run any kind of e-commerce site or anything that depends on advertising, you better start testing your site in IE7. Looks like Microsoft is going to push out IE7 via automatic update right before the holidays. And from the CNET article, quote, IE7 will be delivered in the fourth quarter as a high-priority update via automatic updates in Windows XP, Microsoft's director of IE product management said in an interview on Tuesday. The justification, of course, is the significant security enhancements in IE7, he said. Microsoft recommends that all Windows users install the new browser when it ships, he added. And that's end quote. While it should be noted that users will have the ability to choose not to install the update, I'd guess that most will just click yes, as they do to almost everything out of habit. Microsoft will also be offering a Internet Explorer 7 blocker toolkit for businesses, so if you don't want to roll this out in an enterprise, that's the mechanism you're going to want to use. This automatic update could be, and I think will be, a mixed blessing. While anything is likely to be more secure than IE6, who knows how some sites are going to end up rendering with this. The good news for us standards-based coders, and we do definitely try to code to standards as much as possible at LQ, the good news is that we may be okay, as it looks like IE7 is going to be the most standards-compliant browser I think that Microsoft has ever put out. If you coded to the quirks of IE6, though, I think you're going to be in some trouble, and you might want to look at this right away. And as a side note, you shouldn't be coding to the quirks of IE6 anyway. I'd personally still recommend Firefox if you're looking for a better browsing experience. And I say that even though 1.5, it had been 0.4, 0.5 was just released, and I haven't really got into that one too much. But on Linux, at least, it has been a little bit unstable for me, at least more unstable than Firefox has been in the past. If anyone else out there is experiencing this, or actually is not experiencing this, I'd like to get your feedback on that. But regardless of that, it's still more stable than other browsers that I've used, and certainly more secure than Internet Explorer. So it is still definitely my recommendation. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.